Let's do some tech talk, shall we? Why not?
Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
Hello, Lee Stark. We've lost Lee Stark. Let's go to Lee on line four. I'll get him back. Hello, Lee Stark.
Oh, that sounds much better.
How are you, mate?
I'm okay, mate. Yourself?
I'm all right. Mate, I've got a couple of questions here. I love this one. This is from Donnie. Hello, Donnie. It could have been written from Brent, in fact. Donnie says, can you ask Lee, your tech guy, this question? Are you ready for this?
Okay.
I am addicted to my Apple Watch. How can I give it up?
Take it off your arm is the first example. It depends on what you mean by addiction. I mean, if you're addicted to your Apple Watch, you're stuck on an iPhone forever. But if you want a really good way to stop being addicted, switch to an Android because it doesn't work there.
There you go. So I think, is there an Apple Watch Anonymous he can go to? Probably not. Donnie, you've just got to make that decision. I'm going to give up the Apple Watch. And as Lee says, take it off.
Yeah. We'll switch to an Android. That works too.
All right. Gemma says, is there an app or a website that I can use to find out how much data I use for my Wi-Fi at home? And she's got reasons she wants to do that. She said, I'm currently with Dodo and their invoices and websites don't list it. I do not believe I use a lot of data as I'm not home often, and my phone data is often better reception for internet. If I was to use an old phone or get a Wi-Fi dongle, I could in theory almost cut my internet cost in half. I would need to know how much data I am using to figure out which data plan I would need. That's from Gemma.
Yeah, so your router probably has that information. You can't run an app specifically because you're not home all the time and it needs to run on the actual modem, the router itself. So you can't run an app necessarily, but your router will probably have that functionality. So depending on who makes your router, look for an app for the router instead, because that will probably give you monthly bandwidth that you've got. And otherwise, I mean, Dodo's, any ISP will give you the amount. People often think they're not downloading as much as they are. Things like movies, like TV shows, streaming, all of that contributes. But it's not just downloads, it's also uploads. So it's a bi-directional process that chews through data. You shouldn't be chewing through extreme amounts, obviously. And a lot of plans will actually be unlimited. But the advice would be to check your modem to find out if it's got an app. And if not, try and log into the modem itself. Every modem, if you go look for the manual for your modem, it's got an actual web address that you can log in at, and provided you put in your username and password, which, to be honest, is almost always admin and password. That's typically how they're set. If you log in, it should give you the information built into the router itself.
Thank you for that. Trevor says, I have a Panasonic television that is 5 or 6 years old. Last night, it came up with an error that says no network connection and my apps will not work. He said, however, I can still use my Netflix. It says to reset the connection. He said, I have tried.
Yeah, it does. So it sounds a lot like the actual, either the Wi-Fi in it is failing or the actual operating system is failing. Panasonic was never known for having great operating systems. It was this really awkward interface that only worked with its own apps. And the worst part is that Panasonic no longer has TVs in this market, so it's not as if there's a lot of support there. It sounds as though the TV's operating system or its Wi-Fi connection is on its way out. That's where I'd be for that. The easiest solution for me would be to replace whatever you're using for your smart technology with something like a Google Chromecast or an Apple TV. That way you've still got the TV. TV's still totally functional. Don't replace a TV just because of the apps. Replace the actual thing that you would use for the apps.
Could I ask you, what sort of price are you looking at if you go out and buy one of these Google thingy-jigs?
So a Google TV of Chromecast is about, they range between about $60 and $100, and the Apple TV is obviously around $200, a little bit more than that. So it just depends on what you're used to, the sort of interface you're looking for.
And all you do is go out, spend your $100 on the Google one, because, you know, a lot of people are in the Android side of things rather than the Apple world. If you're in the Apple world, go and buy an Apple TV. But if you're in the Android world, go and buy, what do you call it, a Google Chromecast?
It's called a Google TV these days with Chromecast. The official name is Google TV with Chromecast. And what it is these days is an actual TV operating system similar to an Apple TV with Chromecast functionality in them. They're actually also good for Apple users who don't want to spend as much on an Apple TV. You don't need to be an Android person to use them, but it's basically an inexpensive alternative. Amazon also has the Fire Stick. That's another option if you use a lot of Amazon services. That can be ideal there as well. Any of these things, they range between $70 and $200. But if you pick one of those up, you can pretty much replace your TV smarts quickly.
And all he needs to do, all Trevor needs to do is go and buy this, spend his $100 to $200, and it comes with the lead, I imagine, and you just plug it into the back of your television, is that correct? And set it up and away you go.
Yeah, they pretty much either have the HDMI plug built directly in and you plug a USB source into it, or if it's an Apple TV, it's a little box that you plug in. And either way, it just plugs in, and that's the source you switch to, and that's where all your streaming apps come from now on.
There you go, Trevor. It'll work a treat, absolute treat, and you won't have any more problems with your Panasonic television. Or failing that, Trevor, if you've got the money in the bank, you can go out and buy yourself for probably less than $1,000 a brand new smart TV, and it will have all those things as part of the TV, correctly?
That definitely works. I had a grandmother that used to buy a new car every time her car battery died. This is kind of like that. I wouldn't replace a TV if your smart apps are dying. It could signal that your Wi-Fi is failing, but again, both of those can be replaced very easily by a smart TV device. But yeah, you absolutely can. You could buy a brand new TV and have the new apps on it if you wanted to.
Beth says, I have a doorbell security camera, which I love. I am able to track deliveries when nobody is home. However, my parents now refuse to visit my house and have taken to lecturing me, saying that I'm letting the internet spy on my family. They will not listen to me when I try to explain the process of getting access to the feed and instead claim that I'm going to be robbed as the thieves can see in my house. How safe are they, and how do I explain it to my parents?
Well, honestly, it sounds a bit like an upside to stopping your parents from coming in.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And are you familiar with the show Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah.
This is starting to sound more like Beauty and the Beast with this question. How can I explain it to them?
You can explain to them the fact that, with the exception of early security cameras, almost all of these things are pretty much locked down to your device. You can also share these feeds with friends. So a good example of this, you can share feeds with family and friends. If you've got a baby cam, you can do the same sort of thing. They can log in. These are pretty safe. The amount of incidents where anyone outside of you have been able to see feeds have been so rare in number, they kind of beg a belief, and we don't really report on them. One option, though, that I would consider is if your parents are afraid of your doorbell, and I've got doorbells like that as well, I love them, you can also get smart locks. And your smart locks can actually operate much the same way. So if they try to come by, not only does the key not work, but they have to have a Bluetooth connection that lets them in as well.
I've got one of those smart locks on my apartment door, and it had to be fire rated. So I could only choose one. It's a Yale smart lock. Not a plug for Yale, but my God, it is one of the best things I've ever installed. It's fantastic.
I'm actually really surprised that smart locks haven't been as big of a deal in Australia as they have been. Part of the reason, I think, is because there aren't many brands doing them, and they are hideously expensive at the time. But they're very cool. They're very clever. They're especially useful for people who do Airbnb, because you can actually just send out a Bluetooth signal, sort of like a temporary pass card, and let people in at certain times. So they have lots of positive advantages, but it sounds like in this case, another advantage would be keeping your parents out.
Yeah, very true. I just love the fact that you can unlock the front door for anybody from anywhere in the world if you so choose to do. If you want to give someone a code so they can access the place any time of day, you can set it up from almost anywhere in the world as long as you've got Wi-Fi connection, and you can send them the code and they can then access your house, your front door, 24 hours a day, or you can put a time code on it so that they can only get in maybe between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Some of the clever functionality that you can tie with your doorbells and video cameras is pretty much monitoring on certain people, monitoring on certain devices, and have the door automatically unlock as you approach. So there are other advantages to it as well.
Oh, fantastic. I love it. I love it, absolutely. It was about $700.
That's a problem. They should have been, a few years ago when they came out, they were less expensive, but they were unreliable because of, I think the batteries were just faulty for them. They're getting a lot better, and some of the models you can get in Australia are great, but they are expensive compared to a lot of other locks, simply because smart locks haven't grown the way we expected they would.
Mate, let's revisit what happened last Friday week, and it's arguably the world's biggest tech problem of the year, the CrowdStrike outage. It's already paving the way, they say, for scammers to take advantage. What do people need to look out for?
You need to look out for yet more Microsoft is calling you scams. I generally thought we'd be over this 5 years ago, but we're back because a lot of people think this was a Microsoft problem when it wasn't. It was just a problem that affected Windows because of another company. So Microsoft's not going to send you emails. It's not going to send you SMSs claiming to log in. Travel agents probably won't do the same. We've already seen that scammers are jumping on this. Scammers jump onto anything that is topical because people pay attention to it. So tax time scams are big at the moment as well. That's a yearly occurrence. When COVID was a big thing, they were jumping on that as well. So in this instance, they're going to send you a whole bunch of fake logins from banks, from travel agents, from airlines, from Microsoft. None of this stuff is legit. Look at the link carefully, and if you have an account with bank or MyGov or anything like that, make sure to switch multi-factor authentication. That's the whole send a message or send a code to your phone to actually log in. The reason why we suggest this is it's just one extra layer that scammers can't actually account for. If you were to accidentally put your details on a fake website, those scammers would still have to have multi-factor authentication to try and get through it, and they don't have that. They need access to your phone in order to do that. So what you should look out for is a whole bunch of dodgy SMSs like normal, a whole bunch of fake emails. Just make sure that none of these companies will send you requests to log in over these details. If you're unsure, call the company itself.
How sensible is it to set up a separate email address for you to use only for buying things online?
It's definitely sensible. I don't think it would make a huge amount of difference, largely because you're still going to be tying your extra layer of authentication to your phone. So if you follow the right sort of procedures in terms of protecting yourself online, it doesn't matter a lot because you've still got a second layer. There's other options as well. There's things like pass keys, which is kind of like a secure way of saying your phone is the password, and we've got an actual mechanism to do that. So there are other ways to do it. It's worth pointing out that your email address isn't the sacred thing in this. It's actually your phone number that's the most sacred part.
Right.
Your phone number is unique. If you set up a second email address, there's a good chance that it could be, you know, found out anyway through another leak or just random brute force testing. I don't think your email's the problem in this one. I think it's just a matter of keeping good password hygiene, good security practices. That's your best way of making sure that you don't get lost to a scammer. They'll do anything they can. We're worth a fortune. In Australia alone last year, there was $2.8 billion lost to scammers that we know about. That's just the reported information. Who knows what the unreported losses look like? So all of this comes down to solid hygiene, do the right things, and a lot of education. Because the thing I always talk about when I talk about this topic is that security software does not help with scams. It's all about education. It's all about being aware. It's about being skeptical in many cases about what messages and what SMS you're receiving and going, that's probably fake. The worst part is that often older generations are the most vulnerable because they're not taught to the right things to actually do. They're not, so they don't see it, and they're the ones likely to lose on investment scams in the worst way possible because of all the excess money they might have. So just be aware that, be as skeptical as you can if you receive an SMS that looks like someone's asking you to log in. You can usually tell by looking at the URL itself. I have a whole bunch of tips at my website about this. There are a lot of dead giveaways, but you have to know what they are before you go in.
Quick plug for your website.
Oh, yeah, picker.com.au.
PICKR.com.au. Two words you just used. In the last hour, we took a couple of calls talking about the lucky country, and a guy called John rang and said that he was born in 1943, and he feels we're not a lucky country anymore, but he decided not to go down the road of, you know, getting involved in mobile phones and tech and all that sort of stuff. And you just used two words that I thought I would never hear, and I'm into tech things. Password hygiene. There you go. We've heard of hygiene. I mean, with COVID, the pandemic, hand washing hygiene, that was the big thing. Now, in the world of tech, we have password hygiene?
We have password hygiene. We've been using this term for a while because a lot of people think that passwords are basic. They're the things that you can reuse. I mean, we've heard forever that they should be complex, and that's difficult to do. But good password hygiene is often about creating your own cipher. In many ways, it often feels like you're creating your own code to decipher your own passwords. One of the easiest things that we've come up with in the past few years is if you have a complex password already and you want to use it and you want to reuse it, which is probably a bad technique, what you can do is add a couple of characters on the end of the password so it makes it specific to a different website. So if you've got a complex password already and you're like, I just want to reuse that, that's the one I want to remember. This is an old password hygiene thing that still works, not perfect anymore, but it does do enough deviation. You put an exclamation mark on the end and a couple of characters to signify that that website. So Facebook might be exclamation mark FB exclamation mark, and it just makes it uniform unique enough so that you can still remember it. A lot of people use that as a form of password hygiene because it means you're not having to conform to all the new password approaches. You know, it doesn't have to be impossible to remember. You can still kind of remember what you need to do.
Okay, Dyson, we know them for, well, I suppose we know them for vacuum cleaners. They've got, really expensive hair dryers, a couple of other things. Now, they have an $800 pair of headphones.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually not their first pair of headphones. Like 2 years ago, last year it came out, but 2 years ago it was announced they had a pair of headphones that had a filtration mask inside of it. They were called the Dyson Zone. They were probably the most awkward headphones you'd ever see. I've worn some really weird headphones where I've caught myself in the mirror in the middle of the city and gone, I would kick my own butt wearing these things. Dyson Zone are a little bit different. They're similar in that they're Dyson's headphones. They're noise cancelling, but they don't have the mask built into them, so they're a little bit more fashionable. You can wear them without needing to kick your own back. They're $800. They're made to compete with the AirPods Max. They're made to compete with the Sonos Ace. I'm not quite sure they'll be worth the price. They're mostly geared at the fashion market because you can replace the pads and the end caps. You can stylize them to your heart's content, provided you pay extra for them. It really does feel like they're trying to go for the high-end market. There are a lot of high-end headphones coming out. The most expensive I've seen so far has been a pair of like $1,300 noise-canceling headphones. So $800 is high, but not as high as it could be.
For folks who live dangerously, and I used to, but I don't anymore, Apple has released their operating system. It's called iOS 18. There's iPad OS 18. Why we say living dangerously, they call them beta updates, and you know, anyone can go online and, you know, sign their life away and download this beta update, but it can really, if I may use this word, bugger your phone.
Yeah, look, they're certainly okay to run if you want to see what's happening in the future. So if you get an idea and you're like, I want to see what Apple's, what iPhone 16 effectively is going to look like in September, you can certainly try them. The reason why they're cautious is they do often come with bugs. And they're often the sort of bugs that affect your battery life. They're the sort of bugs that might crash an app here and there. The reason they exist, by the way, is so app developers can get on top of all the things that are coming out. So app developers have been testing these things since July, roughly when it was announced, or June or July. So June, actually. So you can try them out. The public betas are easier. They don't have as many bugs, and they're tested a lot more aggressively. But yeah, living dangerously, I think the iPhone one's relatively safe. I've got it running on one of my devices. I've learned not to run it on my main device because every so often on radio you get glitches. So I'm not speaking to you from iOS 18. I'm from 17 right now. But I've had it happen where in the past I think I was seeing the ABC radio and all the mics stopped working. It's like, ah, that's because I'm running a beta. So often if you have a device that's not mission critical, a lot of people run betas on those to see what they're like. If you have something, if you don't have that sort of device and you don't want to take a chance, just wait till September because that's when the new stuff will come out properly.
All right, Lee, thank you so much for spending some time with us each and every Sunday morning and answering our questions as well. You enjoy the rest of your weekend and we'll look forward to talking to you same bat time, same bat channel next week.
No worries. Happy to help.
See you, mate. Bye-bye. That is Lee Stark. He's got a website, Pickr, P-I-C-K-R. It's one word, P-I-C-K-R, not E-R, P-I-C-K-R.com.au. All sorts of reviews. There's lots of information, lots of tech information on there. There's a link to his email address, and if you've got a question, send it to him. Tell him you listen to us here, and he'll do his best to answer it for you. If you don't want to do that, but you do have a question and you'd like to send it to us, send it to our email address here. You know how to do that. go to the 2SM website, look for the drop-down list of names and Brent Bultitude, and send your techie questions to us. And we'll hit Lee up with that question next Sunday.